Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada. Canto 1, the creation, chapter 19, the appearance of Shukadev Goswami. Today's series, verses 4 through 11. So, and we're going to actually do responsively text 11. That's where the theme. The theme is showing respect to sages. So that's where the theme really is highlighted. Although we do get hints of the theme earlier in the verses. So you can be ready to put, who's doing the computer? We're going to, you have your books. Okay. All right. It's the best. Okay, so text 4, maybe we can start with the ladies going around. Just read the translation.
While the king was thus repenting, he received news of his imminent death, which would be due to the bite of a snake bird, occasioned by the curse spoken by the sage king. The king accepted this as a good news, for it would be the cause of his indifference towards worldly things.
Text 5.
Maharaj Parikshit sat down firmly on the banks of the Ganges to concentrate his mind in Krishna consciousness, rejecting all other practices of self-realization, because transcendental loving service to Krishna is the greatest achievement, superseding all other methods.
The river Ganges, by which the king sat to fast, carries the most auspicious water, which is mixed with the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord and Tulasi leaves. Therefore, that water sanctifies the three worlds inside and outside, and even sanctifies Lord Shiva and other demigods. Consequently, everyone who is destined to die must take shelter of this river.
Thus the king, the worthy descendant of the Pandavas, decided once and for all, and sat on the Ganges bank to fast until death and give himself up to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who alone is able to award liberation. So, freeing himself from all kinds of associations and attachments, he accepted the vows of a sage.
At that time, all the great minds and thinkers, accompanied by their disciples and sages who could verily sanctify a place of pilgrimage just by their presence, arrived there on the plea of making a pilgrim's journey.
From different parts of the universe, there arrived great sages like Atri, Chavana, Saradvan, Ariste, Mini, Burgu, Vasita, Parasha, Vishwamrita, Angare, Parashuram, Uttaya, Indra, Pramana, Idmavahu, Medhi, Aditi, Devala, Aristena, Rudra, Gautama, Malad, Maitreya, Arvo, Kavasa, Kumbayana, Dvaipuna, and the great personality Narada.
And now we're going to do text 11 responsively. Okay. Well, let's chant the verse. So I'll lead it and then you respond. Anye cha devar shiva bar shivarya. Rajar Shivarya Anunadayascha Nanarshiya Pravarans Nanarshiya Pravaransamitan Abhyarcha Raja Shirasavavande Someone want to try? Anye cha devar shivamar shivarya Raja Shivarya Anunadayascha Nanashya Pravaransamitan Abhyarcha Raja Shirasa Pavande Anye Chadeva Shibama Shivarya Raja Shivarya Anunadayascha Nanashya Pravaransamitan Abhyarcha Raja Shirasabhavande Anye Chadevar Shibamar Shivarya Rajar Shivarya Anunadayascha Nanashya Pravaransamitan Abhyarcha Raja Shirasabhavande Anye Chadevar Shibamar Shivarya Rajar Shivarya Anunadayascha Nanashya Pravaransamitan Abhyarcha Raja Shirasabhavande. Why did we stumble on line 3? All right. Very good. So we had to adjust. So usually before you have two consonants like PR and Pravaran, the second word, you hold the previous syllable even though it's short. So that's the ideal time to do that. Nanashya Pravaransamitan. Word for word. Anye, many others. Cha, also. Devarshi, saintly demigods. Brahmarshi, saintly brahmanas. Varyaha, topmost. Rajarshi Varyaha, topmost saintly kings. Aruna Adayaha. A special rank of Rajarshis. Cha and Nana, many others. Arshaya Pravaran, chief amongst the dynasties of the sages. Sametan, assembled together. Abhyarcha, by worshipping. Raja, the emperor. Shirasa, bowed his head to the ground. Vavande, welcomed. Translation, there were also many other saintly demigods, kings, and special royal orders called Anunadayas, a special rank of Rajarshis, from different dynasties of sages. When they all assembled together to meet the emperor, Parikshit, he received them properly and bowed his head to the ground. Please repeat, there were also many other saintly demigods, kings and special royal orders, called Anunadayas, a special rank of Rajarshis, from different dynasties of sages. When they all assembled together to meet the emperor Parikshit, he received them properly and bowed his head to the ground. Purport, the system of bowing the head to the ground to show respect to superiors is an excellent etiquette which obliges the honored guest deep into the heart. Even the first great offender is excused simply by this process. And Maharaj Parikshit, although honored by all the rishis and kings, welcomed all the big men in that humble etiquette in order to be excused from any offenses. Generally, at the last stage of one's life, this humble method is adopted by every sensible man in order to be excused before departure. In this way, Maharaj Parikshit implored everyone's goodwill for going back home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this is the key verse to highlight the theme showing respect to sages. But even before this verse, we had hints of showing respect to sages. I noted them. If you turn back to verse 4, let's see. Okay. And the purport. Let's see. Go ahead, go on. I'm getting messed up here. I don't know where it is. Anybody see where it says Maharaj Parikshit could have gone?
Yeah.
Where is that?
The first paragraph, fourth line from
below. Okay. Oh, yes. Yeah, first paragraph. It's toward the end of the first paragraph. It's a long paragraph. It's text 4 and the purport. And it's toward the end of the first paragraph where it says, Maharaj Parikshit could have gone to the Muni to beg his pardon, but the news of imminent death was conveyed to the king with so much regret by the Muni that the king did not want to shame the Muni further by his presence there. He decided to prepare himself for his imminent death and find out the way to go back to Godhead. So you can see both Shamak Rishi and Maharaj Parikshit, they're very gentle, they're very considerate of each other. And so that was a way to respect the Muni. He didn't want to go there and beg his pardon because it would have just dragged up the whole incident again, you know, fresh in the sage's mind. And he would have been so embarrassed. He's mortified. Shamak Rishi is mortified that his son did what he did. So Parikshit didn't want to go there. He just accepted the curse. So that's the first place I noted. And then in the same purport, six lines from the end of the purport, starts to say they spoil their lives. Let's see. Anybody see that? They spoil. Yeah, I see. Prabhupada is talking about foolish people. They spoil their lives and animal propensities to eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. Such an irresponsible life is adopted by the people in the age of Kali because of a sinful desire to condemn Brahminical culture. Heavy, huh? You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. So there's a deep resentment against a certain kind of people. And you can see this reflected, you know, when somebody's too materialistic, as soon as they see a priest or a nun, or they'll feel, ooh, those people are trying to spoil my fun, you know. They're going to talk about God. I don't want to hear that. Yeah. So that's just the opposite of respect. That's, I also made note of opposites too. Okay, if you go to text 7 now, we're going to look at a little snippet of the purport. Text 7, it's the last line. It's the last line of the verse. Well, I'll just read the verse. Thus the king, the worthy descendant of the Pandavas, decided once and for all and sat on the Ganges bank to fast until death and give himself up to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who alone is able to award liberation. So freeing himself from all kinds of associations and attachments, he accepted the vows of a sage. So, by contrast, Maharaj Parikshit not only doesn't resent sages, but he worships sages. In fact, he himself is a Rajarshi. He's a Raja and a Rishi in one person, and that's a rare, rare person. So he's just following in the sage's footsteps, and he's making a rut. Okay, I'm going to fast till death. And not just fast, but like Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion about Ekadashi, the point in Ekadashi isn't just to fast, but it's to save time. You don't have to worry about eating, ideally. That's the full Ekadashi vrat. And you just increase your hearing about Krishna. There's a limit to how much we can put in our bellies, but there's no limit to how much Krishna Katha we can put in our ears. That's in Shastra. Okay, so, and then in, let's see, verse 7 first. Okay, so in the purport to that verse, it says, Lord Krishna, this is text 7 purport, third line down. Lord Krishna is the fountainhead of the principle of Vishnu Tattva, and therefore shelter of his lotus feet can deliver one from all sins, including an offense committed by a king unto a brahmana. More. Maharaj Pariksit therefore decided to meditate upon the lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna, who is Mukunda, or the giver of liberations of all description. Starting with, I think it was Bhakti Lata brought up, what's this whole thing about lotus feet? And she was here at the house yesterday, I think, and I said, lotus feet. And she said, lotus feetitis. I still don't get it. So the feet are the lowest part of the body, right? But if somebody is a holy person, it's a sign of humility and wonder and great respect to take shelter of that person's lotus feet. The very part of the body we consider the lowest part. Why? Because it's always touching, you know, the dirty ground or the dirty sidewalk or whatever. It's worthy taking shelter of. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu tells a great story about how when he first came to Krishna consciousness, he was in grad school at Penn. So he was just thrilled by Prabhupada's books. And he was getting a PhD in religion. I think it was a master's at that point. So he took his newfound, you know, discovery of Prabhupada's vani, his teachings, to one professor. And he sat down with the professor, and he was sort of just sharing with him how great this Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva understanding is of reality and the nature of truth. And then he was praising Prabhupada. And so after he shared all this, he thought his professor would be thrilled, right? So Ravindra says his professor leaned forward and said, William, you know, that was his birth name, William, take it from me. They all have feet of clay. Do you know what that means, feet of clay, in English? Kalakanta Prabhu.
They're fallible. They will fail you when you need them.
Yes, they will fail you. Feet of clay. It's like if you have a solid, like a statue or a person, and then somehow the feet are not solid. they're going to let you down. It's another hero that you're again going to be disappointed by. William, believe me, take it from me, they all have feet of clay. Whereas the great spiritual scholars like Lochan Das Thakur, who wrote Parama Karuna, Nitai Charana Satya Tahara Sevaka Nitya. Don't think that the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda are like the feet of this ordinary world. They're eternal, and you can find eternal shelter at those feet. So, okay, so, let's go to, text 8, the last bit about respecting sages before we get into the main text. So, text 8, the last line of the purport. Is that what it is? Boy. No, that's not it either. Last line. Where does it say, therefore the sages? Anybody see that? Okay. There it is. That is the last. No, it's not the last. Or is it? No, it's the second last. Penultimate. Yeah, last line. That's what I was trying to tell myself. Last line of the page. Okay. Therefore, the sages who came to meet Maharaj Parikshit were not very much interested in getting themselves purified like common men. Prabhupada talks about how people go to holy places just to bathe, you know, which is fine, but that's just the start. Like common men, but on the plea of taking a bath in that place, they came to meet Maharaj Parikshit because they could foresee that Srimad Bhagavatam would be spoken by Shukadev Goswami. All of them wanted to take advantage of the great occasion. So they know that it's a great opportunity to hear. Once in my life, I attended the appearance of Radha Kund. Has anybody ever been to Radha Kund on the appearance of Radha Kund? So I don't know what it was like for you, but it was for me, it was 1987. It was like 25 years ago. And I was really beat that day, and I felt a little sick. But about 8 o'clock in the evening, you know, Radha Kund appears at midnight, right? Mahanidhi Swami comes knocking on my door at room 42 in the Krishna Balaram guest house. And he said, Sureshwar, are you coming to the appearance of Radha Kund? And I said, oh, Maharaj, I'm not feeling well. I feel I'm beat and I'm feeling a little sick. And then Mahanidhi Swami proceeds to recite a whole litany of verses about how by observing the appearance of Radha Kund, if you're there, you're guaranteed to go to Golok and all these things. So I said, okay, how can I pass that up? So He dragged me, as Prabhupada would say. So he dragged me to Radha Kund. So we get to Radha Kund, and if you've been there, you know, at midnight, you know, and there's all these lights around the four sides of Radha Kund. And it kind of reminded me of a sports event, because there were thousands of people there in the stands, you know, on the steps of Radha Kund. And I'm thinking to myself, where but, you know, in Braj could this be going on? Here it is, midnight, right? And there's so many people there, and we're all waiting, you know, for the big, just like in Times Square in New York, they wait for the ball to fall, you know, for New Year's Eve, the ball to drop, you know, to ring in the New Year. So everybody's waiting, you know, they're looking at their watches, when is Radha Kund going to appear? And we're all sitting on the steps, and then everybody, I mean, men, women, old, young, and I'm thinking, how are we all going to go into Radha Kund? What's going to happen to our clothes? You know, we're all going to go into Radha Kund. What's going to happen to our belongings? And so, and how are we all going to change? You know, here we are in mixed company, and I'm thinking all these things, right? So anyway, at the appointed time, there was no problem. It was like, you know, midnight came, and everybody was taking off their clothes very, you know, discreetly, and then we were all just waiting, and then you left your clothes right there, and there was no worry about theft or anything. You just went into the pond, and everybody's going Jai Radhe, and there's coconuts floating around the kund, and there's and the big snappers are there, you know, the tortoises, and everybody's just in ecstasy. So how did I get into that? I don't know. I get lost in my stories. Okay, so bathing in a holy place. So it's only in Braj could that have happened. So the sages are going, and because Maharaj Parikshit, he had, after he found out what had happened, you know, he found out he got cursed, he didn't take it as any big deal, because he was all along preparing for this, because he was already living in the spiritual energy. So he would say, okay, this is it, you know, this is time to go. And so, because he respected Shyamakrishi, we saw, he didn't want to further embarrass the sage. Therefore, he got darshan of Shukadev Goswami, and all these sages came to hear. There's another great event. They're coming, you know, not for some sports event, but they're sitting down by the bank of the Ganges to hear. So now we go into text 11. We'll try to go into it in some depth. And, okay. So the first thing we notice in text 11, I'll read the verse again. There are also many other saintly demigods, kings, and special royal orders called Arunadhayas, a special rank of Rajarshis, from different dynasties of sages. When they all assembled together to meet the emperor Parikshit, he received them properly and bowed his head to the ground. That's the ultimate asana, right? It's dandavats, just full dandavats. That's the best asana, because that's the asana that will prepare us for the time of death. Yes. Bowed his head to the ground. So again, not only are the lotus feet valuable because they won't let us down, they're not feet of clay, but as a further sign of respect, this is Vedic culture. See, in the West, We don't want to bow down to anybody, right? Nobody's going to, I'm my own person, blah, blah, blah. But the king, he's the emperor of the whole world. And he knows that's about as valuable as nothing in the grand scheme of things. So he's bowing his head to the ground. And it reminded me of another sign of humility from, we hear this a lot. One example of it is it's taking a straw between my teeth. You've heard that one? It's just another sign of humility. So in Prabodhananda Saraswati's Sri Chaitanya Chandramrita, we have this verse. Dante nidhaya chinakang padayo nipatya kritva chakakum shatametadahang bravimi. Hey sadhava! This is the one Prabhupada stops at. Hey sadhavaksakalameva vahaya duran goranga chandra charane kurutanuragam. Prabodhananda Saraswati says, taking a straw between my teeth and just acknowledging your greatness. Oh, you're such an intelligent, you're such a sadhu. Hey, sadhava, you're such an intelligent person, and I'm just begging you, just forget everything you've learned and take shelter. Goranga chandra charane kurutanuragan, and take shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, why does he say taking a straw between my teeth? Now, that seems rather maybe bizarre, even, you know, to the Western ear. But what's the point of humility there? When you take the straw between your teeth, okay, that's an interesting. You can't defend yourself. Well, you can still. You can't speak? okay, you can't. Vaishnav.
I read it somewhere, like Prabhupada says, if you have offended someone, go with straws between your teeth and like stand in front of their house and let them rebuke and like say bad things to you. So you can't speak back because you have straws between your teeth.
But what is, I'm getting at something very interesting. Yes, do you know, Gopal?
Submission?
Yes, but literally, when we're taking the straw between our teeth, we are literally lower than the straw in the street. Why is that? That's a big hint. Yes, but what do the acharyas say? You know, this is, I never thought of this. It's like, it's so common, it's so close that you can't think of it. Where are we? Yeah. So you put the straw between your teeth and you're below the straw. You're literally lower than the straw in the street. Interesting, huh? I think that's Kaviraj Goswami.
So we need to stand. If you lie down, then that's
not true. Okay. So, let's see what else I thought here. Yes. Okay, this is very... Now, if you look in the purport, Prabhupada makes a comment here. He says, generally at the last stage of one's life, he makes a turn here in the purport. This humble method is adopted by every sensible man in order to be excused before departure. Now, why is this so potent? Because Prabhupada himself, he hasn't done it yet when he wrote this. He wrote this in 61, 62. But he actually walked the talk completely. So at the end of his life, Prabhupada actually did this. He begged forgiveness from whom? Yes. What did he do? Yes, yes. Here's, I put this in my seminar because one symptom of a founder acharya is that even while he's in this life, usually it takes, people have to die, you know, like Joan of Arc. You know, when Joan of Arc was alive, people thought she was a nut, you know. And then it takes centuries go by, and then finally she's recognized as a special person. Then finally they canonize her, right? That's the way it works in the material world. Very often if you're a great person, because you're so different, people can't handle you, you know. And then when you die, finally, oh yeah, he was quite an extraordinary person. And then someday they'll make you a saint, right? So they did. They canonized Joan of Arc. But even, you know, in his lifetime, Prabhupada was recognized as the leader. So it's true, at the end of his life, Prabhupada, in his uttam, because when he was in his preaching leela, he was coming down to mandyam. He was making distinctions, right, between those who are serving, those who are not serving, the envious, who's a candidate for Krishna consciousness. That's madhyam. But in the Mahabhagavat Uttam Adhikari mood at the end, he was exhibiting, you know, radical, extreme humility. So he told, I forget who exactly, maybe you can help me with this, to someone, one of the devotees, to go fetch his godbrothers, go put the word out that our Prabhupada wants to see you. So most of them came to his bedside, because they knew he was leaving this world, and they did have issues in the past, but Prabhupada did actually reconcile all differences. And here is, I think this is from the Lilamrita. Yes, Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 6. When Prabhupada began asking his godbrothers to forgive him, they protested. "You are the eternal leader," one of them asserted. "You rule over us, guide us, and chastise us." Now, Prabhupada not only said heavy things, and not out of, you know, material envy or spite or malice, but he said heavy things to protect ISKCON, to protect the ISKCON branch of the Chaitanya tree. He didn't want what happened to ISKCON, or what happened to the Gaudiya Math, to happen to ISKCON. So he went so far as to say, and it was very challenging for us to hear this stuff, because in the same breath, practically, Prabhupada would say, "But it's not your business to criticize my godbrothers. You are junior. They are much more advanced than you." But for the sake of the mission, like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he went so far as to say they all became useless, because they didn't follow their founder Acharya's final instructions to work cooperatively under a GBC. Yeah, have guru-disciple relationships, but this all has to be supervised, as his own father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, saw. If we're going to take this to every town and village in an organized, systematic, concerted effort, we need a governing body to oversee it all. Because it's not that everybody who comes along is going to be on the level of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Saraswati Thakur, and our Srila Prabhupada. Those are gurus among gurus. So there needs to be some oversight of how things are being conducted. So Prabhupada said those heavy things, both in letters and in books. Books are, you know, public information, public domain. So there it was in print. And his godbrothers were well aware of these things, because a lot of them knew English. So now Prabhupada is begging forgiveness, and they're saying, "You rule over us." I believe this is Puri Maharaj, spokesman for the godbrothers. "Forgive all my offenses," Prabhupada repeated. "I became proud of all my opulence." "No," said Puri Maharaj, "yes. You never became proud. When you started preaching, opulence and success followed you." So he's paraphrasing Shastra. When you surrender to Krishna, liberation, material stuff, they come chasing after you. You know, "Oh, please, you know, we want to serve you." And because Krishna gives you all facility to spread Krishna consciousness. "That was the blessing of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Krishna. There cannot be any question of your being offensive. When Srila Prabhupada presented himself as Mahapatita, greatly fallen, Puri Maharaj did not accept it. 'You have saved millions of people around the world,' he said. 'Therefore, there is no question of offenses. But you should be called Mahapatita Pavana, the great savior of the fallen.' Prabhupada's disciples regarded Prabhupada's asking for his godbrother's forgiveness as a manifestation of his humility." So humility is always the key. That's the jewel of the Vaishnav, and that allows us to chant constantly, as we hear from the third Shikshastak. Okay. I just want to tie up one thing that from a previous class. It's a little off topic, but since there was mention in previous verse that the modern people, they don't want to, what did it say? They don't want to follow Brahminical culture, right? They resent Brahminical culture. So who was it? I think it was Stephanie asking about Brahminical culture and cow protection. Okay. So in many places, Prabhupada does connect the two. You know, what's this thing about, what to speak of lotus feet? What's this thing about cows? What's this thing about the holy cow? So it's because we're so away, you know, divorced from the way Krishna actually set things up, that we do resent holy people and materialistic consciousness. And we haven't a clue about Krishna's gift to humanity in the shape of Mother Cow. And this is the way, when we say, you know, one of the prasadam prayers that you say when you're offering prasadam, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. Right? Krishna is the friend of all living entities, but especially in the prayer, Rupa Goswami singles out, or I don't know if it's Rupa, I think it's somebody else. You know, he singles out, Go, the cows and the Brahmins. These two creatures, these two beings, the Brahmins and the cows, are key players in bringing us back to God. How is that? Well, the Brahmins, actually, obviously, they impart spiritual knowledge. They're the spiritual authorities, right? But the cow, there's no question of Brahminical culture, as Prabhupada writes, without cow protection, because the cow's milk, as it is, not the stuff you buy in the stores, which is so manhandled, there's a whole industry called, you know, what is it, lactaid. You have to buy stuff to drink instead of milk because you're allergic to milk. Why are people allergic to milk? Because it's not milk. When they homogenize it for shelf life, it's all about money, the almighty dollar, they change the molecular structure of the milk. So what people buy as milk, even so-called whole milk or organic milk, they have to, by law, you know, really monkey with it, you know, for shelf life. It's not milk anymore, and they have bad reactions to it, and therefore milk is bad for you. We have to become vegan. You know, it's not like that at all. So milk, as it is, this is very, for me, most poignantly described in a work that I don't know if you have it here, but it's called Light of the Bhagavat. Yeah. Have you? It's up there. I couldn't see it at a glance, but I hope. Okay, I wish I could have read the whole thing. But where did that come from, Light of the Bhagavat? Anybody know? Clay?
It was in the late 50s or the early 60s.
Early 60s.
There was wasn't that like some type of world peace conference or something in Japan, and Prabhupada had been invited to go, but I don't think he went. He couldn't get enough funds. He didn't get enough funds to go, but still an artist was commissioned to do watercolors, and he wrote different texts describing. He took most of his inspiration from the 10th canto.
10th canto, chapter 20, right. Description of autumn. Yeah. It's a beautiful, the philosophy is all there in nature, and Prabhupada knew that the Japanese really appreciate nature and they learn from nature, like in the 11th canto, the Bhagavatam. So many gurus in nature. So I don't know if it was then that it was commissioned. Later on, Tamal Krishna Maharaj commissioned a Chinese artist to illustrate the text. But Prabhupada, yes, he wrote beautiful nature purports showing the philosophy through nature. And in what we know in that book, Light of the Bhagavad, as Plate 27, is a lot of information connecting Brahminical culture and cow protection. And Prabhupada, I love this line, Prabhupada says, you have the book. Can you... 27. Yes. Let's see, the wonders of... well, it's a part of this, special part of the purport. It talks about... Okay, well, I think that's it. Wait a minute. Here we go. Thank you. Here it is. Less intelligent people. Ooh! I was the cheeseburger king of my block. True confession. Underestimate the value of cow's milk. That makes you a meathead. We eat meat literally. It makes us dull. Cow's milk. It's confirmed in Bhagavatam 10.1.4. It's the verse that Prabhupada has in front of Krishna book. Navrittatar shaira bhagi amanak bhavo shadat chotamino biramat ka uttama shloka gunanu vadat Puman virajeta vina pushugna. That's Parikshit is saying, Maharaj is saying how This is the real medicine, you know, hearing about Krishna. And who will not want to hear about Krishna? Hearing it in parampara, except somebody who's killing himself or killing animals. Vina pushugna. Cow's milk is also called gorasa, or the juice from the body of the cow. Milk is the most valuable form of gorasa, and from milk we can prepare many important and valuable foodstuffs for the upkeep of the human body. The killing of cows by human society is one of the grossest suicidal policies, and those who are anxious to cultivate the human spirit, because the conference was something about understanding the human spirit or cultivating the human spirit, something like that, I forget. It was a spiritual conference. Must turn their attention first toward the question of cow protection. How do you do this? You press the... I want to get to a certain line where Prabhupada describes what... Okay. It's just... Anyway, I'll just tell you the line. Prabhupada describes in this purport how by drinking milk fresh from the cow, like Sukadeva used to drink, that is milk as it is. That has the capacity. Just think about this. Mother cow, she's just chewing a little grass, and by her mystic power, every creature's got a little mystic power, like the spider. You know, I was just reading about spider webs on one of these things on the trails over here by Lake Alice. Mystical, mystic power. The mystic power of the cow is it takes that grass that nobody's going to touch and turns it into the miracle food, milk. Not the stuff you get in the store, but it's such a miracle food that it refines the brain tissues, Prabhupada says, so we can assimilate the subtle form of spiritual knowledge. So without actually taking milk as it is, there's no question in Brahminical culture. We are meatheads. We're dull. We can't assimilate the subtle form of spiritual knowledge. Okay, so Prabhupada did sanction, if we don't have cows immediately, we can offer to the deity. How long are we going to do this, right? How long are we going to lean on that dispensation, that crutch that Prabhupada gave us? This is the friendly challenge of those who want to, you know, advance more in showing the whole world a better way to live. So that is the connection. Mother cow actually helps us be all we can be as human beings by refining that God-given human brain so we can assimilate the subtle form of spiritual knowledge. Also, Krishna is not a vegan. He likes milk and milk products. And when we offer those products to him, he's very pleased, and he leaves it. Purnamai Vavashishyate, we heard last night. He can eat the whole thing and leave the whole thing. So, just wanted to tie that up a little. And that's just the beginning. Stephanie, or any of you, if you've ever lived, I've been blessed to live on ISKCON Farms attempts for about half of my devotional life so far. And you learn so much from cows. I'll tell you, even we get this word ruminate. Cows are ruminants. They chew their cud. And when they do that, it's a real meditation for them. And you can see it. And they don't sleep much. And they sit, you know, backed head to tail, so they tail whisk the flies from away from each other's eyes, and they're always looking each other and massaging each other. And you learn a lot from cows. They are far out creatures given to us by Krishna. What to speak of giving us gorasa, and what to speak of gomutra, which I didn't take for years because my Western mind couldn't wrap itself around, you know, drinking cow pee, right? But cow's urine is very good for you. And as soon as I go to India, you know, all these other things. People take supplements, and I just drink cow urine and chase it with a little water, and I'm fine. And then cow dung. Fertilize the fields, and you clean your house. And, you know, this is so anathema. It's so alien. It's so gross to the Western mind. But we don't know. We don't know Chris's arrangement. And as soon as we try to improve on that, we foul the air, we compact the earth, we pollute the water, and we're really in the soup because we think we have a better idea. Okay, so I'm going to stop there because I have to go to see the man at 9 o'clock. But I'll take a question or two. Stephanie.
I was just wondering, like, the context of what's happening. And what we're reading, like, Maharaj Pariksit
So he got cursed and he just went straight to Ganges. He didn't tell his family anything, you know, like how did the kingdom, like what happened to everything? You know, like he didn't tell his family what happened to him or anything.
That's coming. We don't want to. Oops, where's Kalakanti?
He's taking
like
off.
Like Superman, he disappeared.
Okay, so that's coming up.
It's coming up.
It's coming, yeah.
Yeah, oh, there you are. Yes. So just be a little patient. It'll all be revealed. It's not a bluff. It's coming. Bada Hari Prabhu.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, system of bowing head to the ground, so show respect to superiors. Excellent, elegant. I've seen some devotees, when they come in the temple room, they just reach down from the floor and touch the head like that. Is that a proper way to do it or not?
A short form.
Bow down.
We always do as much as we can, right? Sometimes that's all you can do. You know, like well, you can read in, I think Hari Shaura's diary. Prabhupada was pressed for time, and it was noon Gayatri. He had started his Gayatri, but it was time to go. So he just got out of his seat, and he was chanting Gayatri with his thumb in the string, and he was getting into the car, and he just did what he had to do. So that's the principle. You do as much as you can. Niyamagraha is when we're attached to the ritual and we're insensitive to the time and place. Niyamagraha is when we neglect it. So it's always, we're always walking that razor's edge, that fine line, you know, and it's what's ever favorable for the time, the place, and the circumstance. So if we have time and we have physical capability, why not prostrate ourselves? But maybe there's some circumstance where we have to run through the temple room and just, Jai Prabhupada, whoop. Do as much as you can. 10% faith and 90% common sense, Prabhupada said about Krishna consciousness. So we always have to be on guard, though. That's it's a good question, because our disease is we're not humble, we're proud, and pride goeth before the fall, and false pride is a demoniac quality. Dumbo Darpo, they even sound demoniac. Dumbo Darpo Bimanascha, Krodhak Parashamevacha. You know, these are the demoniac qualities. I think it's 16:4. 16:3, 1, 2, 3 is all about the divine, and then Krishna spends the whole rest of the chapter talking about the demoniac qualities. Why? Because that's our problem. We need to get over it, you know. Not artificially, but by falling in love with Krishna and wanting to be who we are. We're very humble, 1/10,000th the tip of a hair spirits. Not a very big position. We're tiny. Okay. Anybody else before me? So I'm leaving tomorrow morning, but I'm so inspired and encouraged by what I'm finding here at the Krishna House. Thank you for being here. You're helping me come to my next step in my sojourn, my journey back to Prabhupada's lotus feet. So I hope this. Pray I can come back in 2 weeks. Yes, Chaitanya.